Welcome to Akatra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI.
But as always, this is the deep dive, and we've taken a stack of sources, you know, the criticism, the history, the biographical notes, and try to boil it all down for you.
It's quite a task sometimes.
It is. Today we're diving headfirst into Mario Vargas Llosa's really explosive 1963 debut, The Time of the Hero.
Originally, La Ciudad y los Perros, The City and the Dogs. A fantastic title, too.
It really is. And honestly, if you need a shortcut to understanding the unrelenting, gritty core of the Latin American boom, well, this is it.
Absolutely. Vargas Llosa, I mean, Nobel Prize winner in 2010, he's just central to that whole literary movement, the boom.
Right.
But his style, it was different. You know, many of his contemporaries were leaning into magical realism.
Like Garcia Marquez, for instance.
Exactly. But Llosa, he made his mark with this incredibly brutal, unflinching realism. His work, fundamentally, it's about mapping out structures of power.
A cartography of power, the Nobel Committee called it.
Yes, that's the phrase. And these trenchant images of the individual's resistance, revolt, and ultimate defeat. And believe me, you feel that defeat powerfully in this novel.
And the background here is just crucial, isn't it? Because it's semi-autobiographical. He drew on his own painful experiences.
He did. He was actually a cadet at the Leoncio Prado Military Academy in Lima, Peru.
And that academy becomes the entire world of the novel.
Pretty much. He presents it as this, well, this brutal microcosm of Peruvian society. All the tensions, class, machismo, corruption, they're all magnified there, played out under immense pressure.
Like a pressure cooker, as you said.
Precisely. And the establishment did not react well when it came out.
Let's put it mildly.
Yeah. The military brass saw it as this raw, damning critique, almost treasonous.
They called Llosa himself a degenerate mind, I read.
They did. And then came that... That infamous book burning. High-ranking officials actually organized a public burning of 1,000 copies.
Wow. Right there on the academy grounds.
Right there. Talk about symbolics. But, of course, that kind of censorship, it just backfired spectacularly.
It often does.
It cemented the book's status overnight, made it this major work of protest literature, and basically launched Vargas Llosa onto the world stage.
Okay, so we have this intense setting, this academy. But before we get deep into the plot, we should probably touch on how he tells the story. Because the technique itself is revolutionary, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's not just what he says, but how he says it. The style really reflects the theme. That truth is complicated, fragmented. There's no single, easy version of events.
So what does that look like on the page?
Well, he uses this really innovative, non-linear narrative. The timeline jumps around constantly. Back and forth.
Keeps you on your toes.
Definitely. And you get multiple perspectives. We hear from different cadets, their inner thoughts, their memories, sometimes conflicting accounts.
So you, the reader, have to kind of piece it together, like an investigation.
Exactly, like an investigation. And then there's that technique he pioneered, the vasos communicantes, communicating vessels.
The interlocking dialogues. How does that work?
It's brilliant, really. He'll splice together bits of conversation from completely different times or places.
Without warning.
Often without any clear transition. So you might have a character's inner monologue from years ago suddenly woven into a conversation happening right now.
What effect does that create?
It creates this powerful, dramatic irony. It shows these hidden connections, these invisible threads linking characters and events, all caught in the same systemic structure.
Yeah.
It means the past is always present, always haunting the now.
Okay, fascinating.
Yeah.
So let's get into that world, the Leoncio Prado.
Yeah.
What's the code these boys live by? Because it's clearly not the official rule book.
Not at all. The real power, the real law, comes from this secret gang of cadets called the Circle, El Circulo.
A shadow government, basically.
That's a good way to put it. They operate on absolute loyalty within the group, defiance towards the officers, and, intimidation. It's this code of really violent masculinity that governs everything.
And it strips away their innocence.
Completely. It dictates who survives and who gets crushed. Who's the hunter? And who's the prey?
So let's meet some of the key players caught in this. Their nicknames are almost like labels, defining their place in the hierarchy. Let's start with the one who just can't adapt. Ricardo Arana, known as the Slave.
Arana, yeah, he's the designated victim from the start. He's timid, he's clumsy, maybe overly sensitive for that environment.
Not cut out for the military life.
Definitely not this version of it. He desperately wants out, wants a normal life, specifically connection with this girl back home, Teresa. But because he can't conform to that ruthless, aggressive ethos, he's an outcast, constantly vulnerable.
Okay. Then there's the narrator, the observer, who seems to get by through detachment. Alberto Fernandez, the poet.
Alberto's interesting. He's smart, intellectual, but also very cynical. He survives by being useful, by manipulating the system in his own way.
How does he do that?
He uses his literary talents, ironically. He writes love letters for the other cadets to send to their girlfriends. And maybe more significantly, he writes pornographic stories for them, too, sort of monetizing his skills for protection and favors.
So he's observing the decay, but also kind of participating in it.
Deeply complicit, yes. He's the novel's conflicted conscience, you could say.
And then the one enforcing the brutal code, the leader of the circle, the Jaguar.
Jaguar, he's the embodiment of that raw, primal machismo. Seems like the pure antagonist for a lot of the book. He holds this almost absolute power over the other cadets.
But you mentioned the fragmented narrative earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Does that apply to him?
It does, crucially. He also uses flashbacks, those jumps in time, specifically to humanize Jaguar. We see his backstory.
Which is?
It's shaped by poverty, by street violence in Lima. His aggression isn't just random cruelty. It's this intense survival mechanism he learned long before the academy. It makes him much more complex, even tragic.
Right. And finally, there's an authority figure who actually seems to believe in the rules, Lieutenant Gamboa.
Gamboa is the counterpoint. He's the idealist, the man of stone, as they call him. He represents this pure, rigid devotion to the official military code, honor, justice, duty.
Strict but fair.
Exactly. He genuinely believes in the Academy's mission, which of course puts him on a collision course with, well, pretty much everyone and everything else. He's the immovable object in a system that thrives on moral flexibility, let's say.
Okay, so we have the players, the setting, the code. Now, the spark. What's the incident that sets the main tragedy in motion?
It starts with a crime planned by the Circle. They need to pass a chemistry exam, so they decide to steal the test paper beforehand.
Classic cadet move, maybe, but risky here.
Very. A cadet named Kava carries out the theft successfully, but, and this is key, as he's getting away, he accidentally shatters a glass window pane.
Just a sound.
Just a sound. But it alerts the administration. They know something happened, but not who did it. So they impose collective punishment. The entire section is confined to barracks indefinitely. No weekend leave until someone confesses.
Ah, collective punishment. That always works well.
Never. And this confinement is what breaks Arana, the slave. He's desperate. He just wants to get out, mainly to see Teresa.
So he talks.
He does. He secretly goes to Lieutenant Gamboa, the one officer he might trust, and tells him who stole the exam, Kava.
He breaks the cadet code of silence.
The ultimate taboo. Kava is swiftly identified and expelled. Arana gets his weekend pass, but his betrayal doesn't stay secret for long. Jaguar figures it out.
And Arana becomes a squealer.
A pariah. Instantly marked. The consequences are just devastatingly quick.
What happens?
Shortly after this, during a field training exercise, out in the open, a single shot rings out. Arana falls. He's been shot dead in the back of the head.
Oh, wow. So clearly not an accident.
Well, that's the question. But the authorities, their reaction is immediate. Chillingly fast. They rule it a stray bullet. An accident during maneuvers. Case closed.
So it's like that, to avoid scandal.
Exactly. Preserve the Academy's reputation at all costs. The official story is cemented almost before Arana's body is cold.
That's terrifying. But Alberto, the poet, the cynical observer, he doesn't buy it.
No. This is where Alberto faces his own moral crisis. He's always survived by looking away, by being detached. But now he's hit by this sickening certainty. He's convinced Jaguar killed Arana in revenge for the betrayal.
So does he stay silent, or?
This is the novel's absolute turning point. Alberto does something completely out of character. He sheds that cynical skin. He breaks the most sacred cadet rule. You never squeal on another cadet, especially not to the authorities. And he goes to Lieutenant Gamboa.
To accuse Jaguar.
Formally accuses Jaguar of murdering Arana.
Yeah.
This act aligns him, the cynical survivor, with Gamboa, the rigid idealist. And it puts both of them directly in the path of the institutional machine that just wants this whole thing buried.
And Gamboa.
Yeah.
His integrity really stands out here, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Faced with the official accident story from his superiors, he still pursues it.
He absolutely refuses to back down. His code, his sense of honor, demands the truth. He believes in the system, ironically.
So how does he investigate when the system itself is against him?
He launches his own secret investigation. He interrogates Jaguar, tries to break him, and most importantly, he directly disobeys orders. He retrieves the actual bullet from Arana's body before the autopsy can make it disappear.
Risky. What's his plan?
He sends it off for a secret, private ballistics analysis. He thinks if he just follows procedure, gathers the evidence, proves it wasn't an accident, then justice has to follow. He fundamentally misunderstands the nature of the power he's up against.
Because the higher-ups, the colonel, they see Gamboa's investigation itself as the threat, not the potential murder?
Precisely. A murder scandal would destroy the Academy's prestige. So the institution reacts exactly as corrupt institutions do.
How?
They don't try to disprove the evidence Gamboa is gathering. They don't engage with the truth of the accusation. Instead, they go after the messengers. They target Alberto.
How do they get to him? Leverage.
Brutal, targeted leverage. They somehow get their hands on Alberto's stash of writings. The filth, they call it.
The pornographic stories he wrote for the other cadets?
Exactly. They confront him with it. And they give him a stark choice. Either you formally retract your accusation against Jaguar, sign a statement saying it was all a mistake, or you face expulsion, public disgrace, and they will personally mail copies of those stories to your family.
Oh, no. That's devastating for Alberto.
It completely breaks him. He's terrified, isolated. His fear of family shame outweighs his newfound moral courage. He folds.
He retracts everything.
Signs the statement.
Yeah.
Retracts the accusation. The official narrative, Arana's death was a tragic accident, is now lock in stone, endorsed by the only witness who challenged it. Alberto's brief stand for justice is over. His self-preservation kicks back in.
A really tragic demonstration of how institutional power works. It crushes individual conscience.
It shows that intellect, cynicism, none of it protects you when the system decides to protect itself. And once Alberto is dealt with and neutralized,
they turn on Gamboa.
Of course. His integrity, his refusal to just drop the case, his insistence on actual justice, these are now seen as liabilities. Insubordination, even.
So what happens to him? Promotion?
Hardly. His career is effectively derailed. He's punished for doing the right thing. They exile him.
Exile where?
To this remote, desolate, freezing military outpost high up in the Andes Mountains. Basically, the end of the line for an ambitious officer.
Wow. So the message there is just incredibly bleak. If you try to uphold honor in a corrupt system,
you become the enemy. Honor is a liability. The system isn't just broken, it's designed to actively punish integrity. That's Yosa's devastating conclusion in this part of the story.
Okay, let's cool back a bit then. Thinking about that core message, what are the major themes Yosa is really dissecting using this academy as his lens?
Well, the most obvious one, running through everything, is this powerful critique of violent machismo. The academy isn't just reflecting it, it's actively manufacturing it.
A factory for aggression.
Yeah, forcing these boys into emotional repression, teaching them that cruelty equals strength, that dominance is the only goal.
And related to that, obviously, is the institutional corruption we just saw play out.
Absolutely. The failure of authority. How institutions prioritize their own image, their own survival, over truth or justice. The cover-up is central to that theme.
It feels like a coming-of-age story.
Yeah.
A Bildungsroman, but in reverse almost.
That's a great way to put it. It's about the loss of innocence, but it's not about growing up into maturity. It's more about having your ideals, your morality, systematically burned away. A process of degradation, really.
We see their dreams and ethics just kind of dissolve.
Exactly. And woven through all of this is the theme of social class and hierarchy. Yosa is very subtle but deliberate about this.
How did that play out?
You see the underlying tensions between someone like Alberto from the wealthy Miraflores district of Lima and Jaguar, who comes from poverty. The academy doesn't erase those divisions, it kind of weaponizes them. The violence inside often mirrors the social violence outside.
It's not a level playing field, even within those walls.
Not at all. It reinforces the existing hierarchies.
And then the final kicker, the ultimate statement on resistance, really comes in the epilogue, right? Years later.
The epilogue. Yes. It's the final turn of the screw. Does anyone really escape? Does rebellion achieve anything lasting?
What do we find out?
We see Alberto and Jaguar years down the line, and they've both been completely, well, domesticated by society is the phrase that comes to mind.
How so? Alberto first.
Alberto is successful. He's assimilated perfectly back into his upper middle class life. He's a professional, probably comfortable. The cynical survivor ultimately chose self-interest and thrived in conventional terms.
And Jaguar, the fierce rebel leader.
This is maybe the most striking transformation. Jaguar, the embodiment of primal defiance, he's now a respectable bank clerk.
A bank clerk.
Yes. And he's married to Teresa, the very same girl that both he and Arana loved from afar back in their youth.
Wow. So the fire is gone.
Completely extinguished. The dogs of the academy, the ones who snarled and fought, are now tame citizens. The system won, utterly. That violent, passionate, rebellious chapter of their youth is firmly closed. The time of the hero, if it ever truly existed, is definitively over.
It really forces you to confront how easily moral courage can just evaporate when faced with fear, or even just the mundane pressures of getting by.
And the immense difficulty, maybe the impossibility sometimes, of finding justice when institutions are solely focused on self-preservation. It's a hard look at compromise and assimilation.
It really stays with you. That sense of potential crushed, and the idealist, Gamboa, punished for his ideals.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.